Enjoy.
Woohoo! Woo! Woo! I'm Nancy Cook. I'm an alcoholic. Man, I'm so grateful to be here. I've already filled up. It's been fantastic. Thanks to Sandy and the committee for asking me, and Kendra, my hostess. It's just what a lively group. I've heard about this convention my whole sobriety, but I've never been here, and it's just fantastic. Let's see, where do I start? Welcome to the newcomers. My very first attraction to Alcoholics Anonymous was the laughter. And whenever I'm at a meeting and a newcomer comes in, I always make them stop and listen to the magic and the music of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's just, it was the first thing that appealed to me when I finally surrendered to this program. You know, I thought I was going to be sober and somber my whole life because I had never been happy unless I drank. You know, I started drinking when I was 20, and I should have been happy. I grew up in a beautiful home with loving parents, two brothers and a sister, none of them alcoholic, beautiful adventures and vacations and love and all the things that should have made me happy. But I have a kind of a bad perception, and I still do, left untreated. So things would happen, and then I put them in the Twist-O-Flex, and then they come out garbled. And it's still like that. You know, my sobriety date is April 7th, 1984. And, but I just, I'm still in the remedial group, and you can ask my sponsor, Sharon. I've tried to get out many times, but I just keep, doing crazy dumb things, and I get myself right back in here. So that's the talk you're going to get tonight, is the struggler. Tomorrow night and Sunday, you'll have the advanced recovery, but tonight, you're getting me. And, I'll give you a story that tells you how goofy I am. So a few years ago, a girl I sponsored named Iris, she had bought a home, and she lost her home, and she was moving out, and she was downsizing. And she offered me, she had just brought a brand new king-size bed with the pillow top and the whole thing, and she offered it to me and my husband. And we'd had our bed for like 20 years. You know, it wasn't so bad on my side, but like my husband's side had a dip. So if you're laying down and I look straight across, I couldn't see him. You know what I mean? Just like, and if he tried to get up, you know, he had to kind of like, it took some time to get up out of bed. But so I tell my friend, you're already going to know this is dumb, but just hear me out here. So my friend offers it to me, and I say, I was just about to go on a spiritual retreat for the weekend, and I say, when I get back, my husband and I will go check it out and see about the mattress. I know that seems dumb, but I'm thinking, you know, that they don't just have one mattress factory for the whole world. They have sit and sleep. They have all different kinds. You know, there's all different kinds of mattresses, and I wanted to check it out. So I go to my retreat, and I'm driving back home, and I call my friend Angie on the way home to see what the haps have been happening in my little hometown of Downey, my home group. And she's telling me, she says, oh, Mickey and Daniel, her husband, she said, they went out and got that mattress and that bed from Iris and brought it home. And instead of being happy, I'm mad. I'm furious. Like, I told them to wait until I got back, right? So we had a family get-together. I can't even talk to my husband. I can't even talk to him. I'm so mad that he did this behind my back, right? And I get home, and I call my sponsor, and I'm just furious, right? And I tell her the story just like I told you, and she says, my sponsor, Sharon C., a very nice, sweet woman, that except to me. And so I tell her the story, and she says, so let me get this straight. While you were at retreat, they went and they borrowed a truck, and they drove all the way out to Fontana, and they got this mattress, and they brought it back. Yes, she says, and then my friend had given me all the stuff that goes on at the bedspread, the little skirt, the whole thing, right? And she says, and when you got home, it was all set up with all the bedding and the little skirt and real nice. And I said, yes, you know. And she said, and this was totally free. The whole thing was totally free. Yes. And she goes, you're an asshole, you know. So, but the thing that's beautiful about Alcoholics Anonymous is I can take the hit today. You know what I mean? I know I am, right? You know what I mean? I don't defend it anymore. I'm just like, you know what? You're right. Kind of makes you feel good when you see the truth about yourself. You know what I mean? Just like when a few years ago, my mom downsized from her senior apartment, and she moved into a she moved from her house to a senior apartment, and so she gave me my baby book that I had seen for many years. And I was born in 1954, and back in those days, I mean, it wasn't on social media, so it was like a big baby book. I was her firstborn, and I was very loved. I knew I was loved. I just, there was a disconnect from feeling it, you know, that alcoholic wall that we have, or that I have. And one of the things, and I mean, she had everything in there. It was my first 7 years, and it had birthday cards. It had all the cute things I said. It had teeth, locks of hair from haircuts, pictures. It had everything in there. But one of the things was an index of character, and so it had all these things like friendly, happy, fearful, mean, different things, right? And so, and it has the first year, and I'm doing pretty good for the first couple of years. I've got friendly, happy, joyful, right? And then my brother was born in 3, and then it's like mean, fearful, all these other things. And you know, it's the exact same list of defects my sponsor gave me when I did my inventory 30 years later. You know what I mean? It's just like nothing changed for me since I was 3 till I was till today. You know, and. Anyway, but I didn't start drinking until I was 20 because I wasn't going to drink because it had never been, I'd never had it in the home. I had been offered drinking a few times when I went to college, but I said no thank you because we just didn't drink at all. And but one night I was at a party at college and I was always ready for a drink. You know, I'm just, you know, I've been fearful, you know, self-absorbed, although I didn't know it was self-centered. You know, I thought self-centered meant that you thought highly about yourself, like you were pretty and popular, and so you thought you were all that. And when I got to the program, my sponsor said, no, self-centeredness isn't how highly you think of yourself, it's how often you think of yourself. And that was me when I was a kid, just how I felt. I mean, I didn't know that till I came back, you know, came to AA and looked back at my life, but just, you know, thought about myself. And so I was just, you know, I'm not athletic, I didn't think I was smart, just all these things. I was just a goober, and so I'm standing at the wall at the party with my other friends, and they spiked the punch with Strawberry Hill. It was in a punch bowl, so I didn't know. I had a ladle, I take the Strawberry Hill, and what happened is I went from the wall to the middle of the party, and the whole party came around me and started dancing, calling out my name, going, Nancy, 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 you know. Which didn't happen, but it happened for me that night. You know what I mean? It happened for me that night. And it was fantastic. I mean, I didn't know that I had felt bad for so long until I felt good. Do you know what I mean? I just thought that's the way I felt. And it was magical. And the next, I worked at Tasty Freeze, and the next night I was at Tasty Freeze, and I was taking apart the shake machine. That was my side work, right? And I was recreating the night, you know, how I drank it and how they came around me and how good I felt, and I could not wait to do it again. I could not wait. So I went from I'm never going to drink to I couldn't wait to drink again from my first drink, you know. And I drank as often as I could, as much as I could. And I had been living in the dorms at college. And a couple months after I started drinking, I was at a service station, gas station, which back in the day, I know you all are young kids here, but they used to call them service stations because, I kid you not, when you drove up, an attendant would run out of the little room and come out and put the gas in for you and clean your windshields. I'm not kidding you. So this guy runs over. His name is Skeeter. And we start talking there, and I ended up going home with him that night. And, you know, I know. It's crazy. Much to the, you know, I ended up dropping out of school, living with this crazy guy, and, you know, he became very violent, and just like, it was just like my alcoholic life was my normal life, just like overnight, you know, where there's cockroaches in the apartment, and it was just, you know, he started beating me up, and it's just crazy. And one night, he beat me up pretty good, and he broke my eardrum and cracked some ribs, and he kicked me out of the apartment, and I'm sitting out on the steps of this apartment. I got nowhere to go. I got no one to call. I have nothing. I've dropped out of school. I don't have one thing, right? And my parents lived in the city next door, 5 minutes away, and I could not call them. I could not ask for help. I could not, you know, and I look back in my inventory, it's the first tangible time of remembering I have too much pride. I cannot, because my parents don't ask for help. That's how they were raised their whole life. You know, my mom, it's her birthday today. She's 93, and... So when she went from her senior place to an assisted living a few months ago, There's to qualify for her long-term insurance, her long-term care, you have to not be able to do a few of the things like shower yourself, dress yourself, there's certain things and you have to not be able to do some of them. My mom can't do any of them. She's hunched over, she's a little bitty lady, she can't dress herself. She takes the thing, says, oh, I can do it, I can shower myself, gets denied her insurance because she cannot say, I can't do it, right? This is how I was raised. We don't ask for help, right? She gets denied and then we had to reapply, and this time my brother and I went, and when she said, I can shower myself, we said, no, you can't. Anyway, but just what's beautiful is, so my mom has finally surrendered, and it's so beautiful, like the surrender in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? She finally surrendered at 92 and a half. So I call her. This is a woman who said she showered herself. She would wash herself with little washcloths. She could not get help. So I call her. She says, I gotta go. I'm sitting here naked on my bed and my shower lady's coming to get me. And I'm like, I've never seen my mom naked. All of a sudden, in 2 weeks, she's surrendered to needing help. You know what I mean? She's ready for her shower. And it's like, oh my God, it's beautiful. And now my mom has a list of things for me. I went over there today. She wanted me to take the lids off of some new eye drops she bought and open some boxes for her because she can't do it. And it's just so beautiful to be able to help her, right? And I think how I am with my higher power, like I just sometimes wake up with my self-determined idea of what my life is supposed to look, you know, I check in with God and then I just go bludgeon my way through my AA day, right? You know what I mean? how my God would be if I say, God, you know, can you open these eye drops for me? Can you just help me shut my mouth for 1 second today? You know, how beautiful that would be to come with him, like the humility that my mom has to ask me now, poor thing, you know, just to the surrender for her. But anyway, where the heck was I? So I have to ask for help. I can't ask for help, so I have to talk my way back into the apartment, right, which I do. I have nowhere to go. But I knew something had to be different. I had to get out of that situation. So the next day, I'm down at the pool, and I'm reading the want ads, and they had an ad in the paper that said, nude models earn $500 a week. And this is 1974. I don't know, that $500 a week even now, it's not bad. I would take it, not for nude modeling, but you know what I mean? That's a lot of money. So. And I was really very naive, and I really honestly thought that it would be nude modeling, like legit, like I would be sitting on a stool and the college students, maybe from my college, would be sketching me with charcoal, maybe for their art show. So anyway, I go down for my interview at the Fantasy Nude Modeling Studio in Santa Ana. And they tell me what I got to do for the $500 a week, and I really was shocked, right? And I go home, and I tell Skeeter, and he goes, oh, that's a good idea. I'm just like, okay. You know, it's just like, you know, I just accepted this way of life. This is in the first 6 months of my drinking. This is when drinking was working for me, you know. It just, I start working there, and I wasn't there very long, and ended up getting arrested for prostitution. And part of my probation was I couldn't work at any nude modeling studio anymore. And I remember I was just devastated because I've dropped out of school. And, you know, another funny thing that's in that baby book that my mom gave me is, you know, every page is filled out, meticulously filled out. It's a masterpiece, right? Except for one page has nothing in it. It's special talents and abilities. I kid you not. Nothing on it. And, you know, it's kind of funny because I really did know that when I was a kid. Like, I'm not hurt by it, right? You know, Alcoholics Anonymous gave me special talents and abilities, but it was just kind of like, it was just like I read it and it's like, I knew there was nothing good about me. But you know, your parents, they're well-meaning. They're like, you're good, you're smart. You know, I'm not. So anyway, I got nothing going for me. So, but I'm driving down the street and I see a want ad sign in the window of a restaurant called Norm's Restaurant, and I applied there and I became a graveyard server and amazingly just retired from my same job after 46 years. You know, it's just, I know, crazy. So I get rid of Skeeter and then I'm drinking in the clubs and the bars. I was always looking for him. You know, I just loved to be where the action is. I just, you know, I'm going home with somebody tonight, and if I didn't find you at 2, I used to go to this after-hours club in Inglewood. I would find you by 6 a.m., you know what I mean? I'm going home with somebody tonight, right? And it was just crazy. And, you know, in between that, I had 4 boyfriends, all of them violent. And I used to say, God, I'm the victim of these crazy, violent guys. And now, today, I know that I am a magnet for crazy people, drunk or sober. You know what I mean? No delusion about it. The crazy newcomers that come into the room, I already know they're coming for me. We have a lot of women that sponsor in my group. But the crazier, the crazy hair, the ones with the crazy eyes, I just like, here they are. Here's my people. I'll give you an example. So my sponsor, Sharon, she sponsors a lot of people, and she sponsors nuns and teachers and professionals and all these beautiful people. This is one of the gals I sponsor. So about a year ago, a dog got into my backyard from down the street and killed my little dog. It was really sad. And it's terrible. And so my sponsee calls me. She was fairly new, 30, 60 days, I'm sure. And she says, with all the sincerity and love in her heart, says, I have an unregistered gun, and I would be happy to come over and shoot the dog that killed your dog. I'm like, yeah, that's my people. You know what I mean? Who needs a nun when you got Cassandra, right? You know what I mean? So anyway, this was just a crazy life of drinking. And meanwhile, my job saw something in me, and they started giving me management jobs to do and started working me up. And then we had women assistant managers, but there was no women general managers of Norm's. It was a small family-owned business, about 15 restaurants at the time. And I was obsessed with becoming the first woman manager for Norm's. So now I have the double life. In the day, I'm in my Dress for Success suits, and at night, I'm out in the clubs or with these crazy people, just like complete double life. And, drinking, and just a big part of my life, every day. But I functioned and went to work, and finally I made manager. It was like, I was so excited. It was what I'd been working for 10 years, right? And I make manager, and there's the parties, and woo, woo, and then thud, because that wasn't it. You know, like I've spent a lifetime looking out there for something to fix this in here, right? And just having it come up empty, you know? When I was 11 years old, I didn't get enough Christmas gifts, so I convinced my mom, my poor mom, to get me the thing that was on my list that she didn't get me, which was an Elvis Presley album, Girl Happy. So we go and we get the album at the record store, bring it home, we put it on the stereo, it starts to play, Girl Happy, Girl Happy. And I remember thinking, that wasn't it. You know what I mean? Just like a lifetime of that, of the stuff not fixing me. And so it was pretty dark after that. My drinking's worse. You know, I can't stop. It's just terrible. And so it came Christmas time, and I had a party for the employees at one of the servers' house. You know, I bought the food and all the stuff for the party, and I was just going to go and have a couple drinks and say thanks for a successful year and then drive home. I don't know. I can't have just a couple drinks. I had no idea. I'd never tried to control my drinking. But anyway, I'm at the party and sipping on gin and juice, and I have this black dress that ties around here, and then it ties up around my neck. And I guess I was rocking the cabbage patch a little bit too vigorously, and my top fell down, and I exposed my boobs to all the employees, right? And I was young and pretty cute, but nobody said, dang, boss, you're hot. You know what I mean? Like that, nobody said that. It was awkward, you know, and I was so embarrassed. And, you know, I get in my car, and I had this Datsun B210, woo, and it was a hatchback for you kids, and I folded the back seat down, and I had all my Dress for Success suits and then my clubbing clothes, because I never knew where I was going to be, right? And so I get in the Slutmobile, which I called it, and which I was very proud of, you know, just something I was good at, and I'm driving back to where I'm living with this crazy guy who's going to be very upset with me because I've been gone now for 8 hours. It's like 4 o'clock in the morning, right? And I get pulled over by the police, and they're giving me the sobriety test, which I'm flunking. And so, like, I really am grateful to alcohol. I really feel that alcohol saved my life. Like, looking back, I don't think that it diverted me from my life of normaldom. Like, I was somehow broken inside. I wasn't going to just be normal. Something was wrong, most I know now, alcoholism, right? But alcohol saved me. It saved my life, and it was the answer to all my problems. Like, if I had a bad day at work, I drank. If I couldn't pay my bills, I drank. Fight with a boyfriend, I drank, right? But this night, I had just exposed myself. I got to face the employees tomorrow. I'm either going to go to jail or I'm going to get beat up by my boyfriend. Not good choices, right? And just for one split second, I saw that alcohol was the problem. I had never looked at it that way, not one time. It was the solution. Yeah, pitiful and incomprehensible demoralizations happened. Yeah, a lot of bad stuff. happened, but it was the answer to my problems, and I saw it differently, which started me on my long journey to surrender in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I thought I could do AA light, you know, would go to some meetings, judge the people in them, and you know, I used to go to this meeting on Monday night. They said, keep coming back. I thought they meant next Monday night, because who in their right mind is going to a meeting on Friday, Saturday night? You know what I mean? Just like, I didn't hear it for a long time. And finally, like I said earlier, I sat in the parking lot and I surrendered. And I went in, and that's the night I heard the laughter and got a sponsor. She, you know, she cornered me in the meeting, and, you know, like they do, and started me on the course of action. And it wasn't long before I started loving Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, the pain was in the resistance to the surrender. You know, once you give up, it was great. And, you know, commitments and working the steps and getting in the middle of the program, and it was just awesome. And her line was, she said, I want you to do the things that make you feel good about being Nancy, not to be confused with the things that just make you feel good, which I really had no idea what she was talking about. And her example was like when the alarm goes off in the morning and you hit the snooze button, you feel good because you had 10 more minutes of sleep. But if you shut it off, get up, and get to work on time or even early, which she used to say, you know, if you're not early, you're late, which, you know, is a bunch of stuff you don't understand when you're new. But it's so true. She said, you start to feel differently about Nancy, right? And I started taking those actions, and I started to change. And, you know, one funny thing that happened, you know, when I probably within my first 30 days, I decided that since I was already so miserable quitting drinking, you know, I was going to go on a diet and quit smoking all at once. I was going to get rid of my bad habits all at once, right? And I thought it was a good idea. You know, if you're miserable, might as well throw it all in and just get good. And so I go over to my sponsor's house. Now, normally when you tell someone you're going to quit smoking or go on a diet or eat healthy, people are like, right on. You know what I mean? Good for you. That's what I'm expecting. So I go and I tell my sponsor my good idea, and she's sitting there in her little recliner, and I tell her my good idea. She flew up out of that recliner in one swoop, puts a cigarette in my mouth, lights it while she simultaneously is making a bologna sandwich for me, which I ate. And she said, it's gonna take, with her finger right at my chest, it's gonna take everything you have to stay sober. Don't kick the baby, you know, and that's just so true. I was at a party last night and a brand new girl was talking about quitting smoking, and I don't know her well enough to say anything to her, but I just thought, you know what I mean? I'm so grateful for that. You know, eventually I quit smoking. The diet, well, you know, that's a work. It's all good. It's all good. And so I'm doing good in the program, loving the program. And after I had like a year and a half, I met this guy in the program, and we were friends. It was my sponsor's son, and we start hanging around. He was also a restaurant manager, and we went to meetings together as friends, and then something changed, and we started dating. And it was just great because I had never been friends with anyone. You know, you meet someone in a club, you're not friends. You know, you're friends with benefits that night, you know. And we were like the AA couple of Downey, and everybody was happy for us, which, you know, no one had ever been happy for anybody I had dated before. And it was just awesome. It was a beautiful time, and we decide we're going to get married, and we're going to get married at this little church in Downey. But they wanted us to have some premarital counseling before we got married, and we were kind of nervous because, you know, I had the prostitution arrest. I'd had some abortions. My husband had been married 3 times, but only divorced once. Long story, you know. The kind of story you hear all day in AA, and people are like, yeah, yeah, right? But you know, we didn't think that was going to be the same reaction when we got to the church, and we were pretty nervous, but we wanted to be honest with the minister because we didn't want to pretend that we were something we weren't. We wanted to be really honest with who we were and what we were going to try to bring to this marriage, right? So we get in there, and I don't know who went first, and tell our story, and like do a fourth and fifth step, and my husband tells his story, and we look at the minister waiting for him to say, you know, I cannot condone this marriage, and he starts crying. He goes, I'm an alcoholic, and I need help. So that night for our premarital counseling, we took him to a meeting, and he ended up staying sober. He died a couple years ago with over 30 years sober, so it was just like a magical, you know, we just knew our marriage was meant to be, and our marriage was great. We bought a home in Downey, and it was, you know, just the AA happening house, you know, parties and newcomers and just activity all the time. People there all the time. It was just beautiful. And it was all the things that I had always looked for out there. It was the click. It was the magic of AA. And I don't know, sometime, I don't know, 5-6 years, I don't really know what happened, when it happened, but my husband's had stopped. He'd going to less meetings because he was working nights as a restaurant manager, and he went to less meetings, and then he got migraine headaches, and he ended up taking codeine, and then right after he took codeine, he ended up drinking again and lost his sobriety. And right after I found out he lost his sobriety, I got a call from a little gal that says that she was having an affair with my husband, and my alcoholic AA good life came to a screeching halt. And I wanted to divorce him, right? Because we all know, I'm not going to stay with someone if they cheat on me. You know, we all know that, right? But I couldn't leave him, so I just contented myself with making his life a living hell every day. Right? Yeah. And it was terrible. Every sponsee I had ended up firing me. It was like the House of Hell. It was like a haunted movie that you see, you know, where the dumb kids go in, where the sponsees go in, they're all happy, and then the doors shut behind them, the shutters go down, and they're trapped in hell with me and Mickey, right? You know, and they're just like, ah! Right? It was a nightmare. Oh, it was terrible. And this went on for a couple years, and I got deaf to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know why? Because I thought, even though that we hear that there's no justified resentments, I'm pretty sure that cheating on your husband or wife is a justified resentment. In my head, this is what I'm hearing. You know what I mean? It's a justified resentment. It's a justified resentment. No lie that it cuts me off from the sunlight of the spirit. Like, I got deaf. I was unwilling. I became a spiritual giant, and he's a bad guy, right? And finally, I got in enough pain to be willing to look at my program differently, you know. And, you know, they say pain is the touchstone of spiritual growth. And I want my spiritual growth to come like when I'm on a ride at Disneyland. Whee! I grew. You know, it's not how it happens for me, you know. It's, you know, I need to be bludgeoned into humility every single time, right? That's just another reason I'm remedial. I don't know. You know, so there's a part in step 10 where it says, you know, some of us go for a yearly overhaul and work in the steps and stuff like that. And every time I read that, I'm like, no. You know what I mean? Like, that's just not me. Unless my sponsor tells me or I'm in pain, I mean, I will work the steps and I will write, but it's not just because I think it's a good idea to be a better person on days. You know what I mean? It's pain. And I got in enough pain, and I was willing, and I started working my program again, and, you know, I got to step 4 this second time, you know. And I guess, you know, I did my first steps to the best of my ability, but my ability had changed, and my pain was greater. And this time I'm writing, and one thing... One of the guys I had been with, he had tried to stab me with a butcher knife. We'd gotten in a fight. He grabbed a butcher knife, and I was in my underwear, and I ran out of the apartment. I'm running up and down the street like a crazy person while he's trying to stab me, which he never did, obviously, because I'm still here. But, you know, we end up going back into the apartment. You know how it is, right? And and I'm writing about this, right? And I'm writing right before he grabbed the butcher knife. I hadn't seen this before. He was just sitting there being a crazy alcoholic drunk guy, and I went over to where he was sitting, and I took a beer and dumped it right on his head, right? He jumped up all pissed off, right, grabbed the knife, right, like he should have gotten up and grabbed my hands and said, babe, you need anger management, you know what I mean? But he was a crazy alcoholic, and so, you know, there's a line in step 8 that I love so much in the 12 and 12. It says, our behavior when drinking aggravates the defect of others, right? Drunk or sober, I'm a defect aggravator left untreated. You know what I mean? Like, even sober, like, I have to really, you know, I can just make, you know, in our best moments, we're a producer of confusion. Like, I can understand in my worst moments, I bring confusion. But this says my best moments, I'm a producer of confusion. What the hell, right? But anyway, so what happened for me when I did that inventory, it was just enough of a tiny little crack in that chink, that my wall of spiritual perfection, that God was able to get in there and just take that crack and open it. Because it doesn't make it right that someone tries to stab you. That's never okay, or beat you up. But I saw that moment that I had a part in everything that happened to me, right? I'm no victim. Like, I aggravated a bad situation, right? And so one of the things, you know, when I got married and my desire to be a good sober mom, when my daughter was born, I just wanted to be a good mom. I really did. So I thought if I just loved her enough, she would be okay, translated, not an alcoholic, which shows you, A, that I know nothing about alcoholism because my parents got it 100% right. Once I took a drink, that was it, right? But I just somehow thought if I got it right, she'd be okay, not like me. So I just want to love her. So I move her into the bed in between me and my husband, right? So now it's Mickey. Instead of Mickey and Nancy, it's Mickey, Kelsey, and Nancy, right? And of course, we can't have marital relations because we've got the angel princess in the bed with us, right? So we stop having sex. No big deal. We had a good relationship. You know, I'm thinking all this makes sense, right? Till you doesn't. And not only that, but my daughter became my intimacy. She became my world. Like, it was me and her that were married, and my husband was non-existent, you know what I mean? Like, and so instead of her whirling around the marriage as it should have been, I whirled around her, right? So she'd be okay. And, you know, I saw that when I did my inventory. And, you know, another thing, when I read it to my sponsor, all this stuff that I was, my sponsor said, you know, Nancy, even when you're right, the way you're right is always wrong, right? You know, I'm just like, I'm just in your face. I'm a defect aggravator. I just, you know, you cannot possibly be humble to me because I'm just so big. You know, I'm just like, you know, and I just, like, I saw myself clearly and I shifted and I changed, you know. I wanted him to change. I wanted him to change because he was obviously the bad guy, right? He would, if he would just stop drinking, I'd be okay. And guess what? When we changed, we're the catalyst for other people to change. Anyway, my husband ended up getting sober again. And when, of course, when he got to his eighth step, he made amends to me. But I had already made my amends to him, right? Long before he got sober and made amends to me. And when I made amends to him, I was totally free. I saw what harm I had done the marriage, right? And our marriage survived, which is not everybody's story, but our marriage survived, and I'm grateful for it because had I just left when I was, you know, the victim of this, you know, bad situation, it was a catalyst for me to see something about myself that I, God really needed me to see how I am. You know, I'm just a bitch. It's awful, right? You just don't want to be around me, and it's just, I just didn't know, you know, and so anyway, so then a few years ago, my daughter, who's now, she was about 26 at the time, she sends me a text that says, Mom, don't get mad. I'm pregnant. And thank God for restraint of thumb and send, because I am I can send you off a text like you can't. I recently saw that there's some app where you can unsend a text. I'm not sure if it was a text or email. I thought, I need that just in case. Just in case my spiritual program isn't on point one day. Anyway, but I didn't. I paused, thank you, God, and I called my sponsor, and I was crazy, and my sponsor told me to write a 10-step, which I did right then, and I started out, you know, I'm resentful at Kelsey. Why? She's pregnant. If she knew the guy a month, I'm a monkey's uncle, right? She barely met this guy. She's pregnant. She doesn't even know him, right? And, you know, this affects my pride. You know, even before this happened, you know, I had seen one of the teachers of my daughter's school. And when my daughter went to elementary school, it was a beautiful time. I was friends with some of the teachers. They had kids my daughter's age. We were just like we a big community of fun and fellowship and camping trips and all the stuff the whole school did together. It was beautiful, right? So I see one of the teachers at the school that I hadn't seen in a long time, Reggie. Reggie, how you doing? And she's great. And she goes, she's telling me about all the kids that my daughter went to school with. You know, oh, Matt, he's on his second master's, and Jillian, she started her student teaching. She's naming the kids, winner, winner, winner. How's Kelsey doing? I'm like, oh, keeping it real, working at Olive Garden 10 hours a week. You know what I mean? Just like, oh, my God, my pride's already affected. You know, it affected my ambition because I want a daughter that can be successful in life. It affected my pocketbook for all the money I spent on dance lessons, a car, Kumon, all the stuff to get her to be okay, right? It affected my sex relations because I can't have sex with my husband because we're fighting over what's best for her all the time, you know, and it's just like, oh my God. And then you get to that last column. We resolutely look for our own mistakes, right? Hey. And one of the things I wrote about was when my daughter was in school, I was obsessed with her becoming citizen of the month. Obsessed. My daughter has ADHD. She does not fit the profile of citizen of the month. If she came in here, you'd fall in love with her. She's chatting you up. She's talking. She's not in her seat. You know, she's doing it. Hey, you know, Joni, you know what I mean? This is not citizen of the month behavior, right? And she would come home with awards like enthusiasm, school spirit, friendliness. And I'm like, oh, that's nice. throw it away. Not really, but you know what I mean? Like, I wasn't happy. Now, I'm addressing this when I have well over 30 years sobriety. This isn't something I found out in the first 5 years. I mean, this is way late. I didn't see it. And I'm writing, why was I so obsessed with her becoming Citizen of the Month? Well, that's the only award that you get that comes with a bumper sticker that you put on your car that says, my kid is Citizen of the Month at Gallatin Elementary School. And I'm thinking, why? So that people I don't know can drive by or pull up behind me, honk their horn, and say, hey, lady, good job raising your kid, right? You know what I mean? Like, you know, and we had been at this, one of the things I wrote about when my daughter was a senior in high school and barely graduated, but we had gone to a family get-together for Mother's Day. And my two younger brothers and my younger sister were there with their winter kids, and my one niece that's my daughter's age, 17, she's in high school, and she was equestrian of the year in California for barrel racing, so she's got showing us her big glossies of, you know, winning the race, and her sister, my niece, was getting everybody's emails, is going to do a family newsletter and keep everybody up on the family happenings, and my brother's little boy was 5, and he rode motocross, cute little redheaded guy, and he's just, you know, got the pictures of him and his little, riding his little motorcycle, you know, so talented. And the coup de grace, my one niece, was on the website for the private school that she went on. If you went to search that website, it says, Paige Miller, age 10, reads at a 12th grade level. So I look down at the end of the table, there's Paige reading this big, thick book, right? And I'm like, oh my God, right? I look to see what Kelsey Cook is doing, age 17, senior in high school. She's coloring the children's menu like this. Oh my God. Right? I'm just like, geez, right. I'm just like, this is the best I could do with all the love I gave her. This is the best I got. So, but I saw myself when I did this step, I saw myself, like, here my poor daughter is. She's a beautiful, beautiful spirit, a beautiful spirit, but I don't want her to be a beautiful spirit like that. I want her to be a beautiful spirit the way I want her to be a beautiful spirit, like she jumps through the hoop and I make it smaller and then I put it on the back of the horse and say, jump through it so I'll be okay, right? And then she can't get through it and then I set it on fire. You know, jump through the hoop, Kelsey, so that I'll be okay. So now instead of things out there to try to make me feel better, I'm trying to make her behave a certain way to make me feel better. I didn't get a single word. I have no aptitudes or abilities at all. And I want her to be something that I'm not. And here my poor daughter is 26, 27 years old before I saw how I treated her. Poor thing. Not being accepted for who she really was. I just didn't see it, right? You know, wanting her to be better, go to school, go to college. You'll be happy if you do it this way, right? And so when she came over to talk to me about the pregnancy, I had a much different demeanor, right? You know, and I love, you know, it's so beautiful in Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, not one person said anything mean about Kelsey being pregnant without being married. Not a single normal person. People would say stuff like, ooh, it's hard to be a single mom, you know what I mean? Or, you know, that's going to be difficult, you know, stuff like that. But nobody said anything mean. But it's so beautiful about Alcoholics Anonymous because Alcoholics Anonymous, but that would aggravate me when people would say that. I would be like, yeah, it is going to be hard. How's she going to do it? How's she going to have money? But people in AA said, oh, baby, she's got her own God. God's in charge. God doesn't have grandkids. She's going to be just fine. You just get up off of her path, right, and soothe me, right? And she ended up marrying the guy, and they had a big, beautiful wedding. A lot of AAs went. It was just, I really knew God was in the room that day, and the marriage didn't last. But the granddaughter is, you know, just, of course, the absolute light of my life that I just adore, right, you know. So I think it's the worst thing that I'm an alcoholic. It's the best thing that could happen to me. I think it's terrible my husband cheats on me. It was the best thing that happened to me. I think it's bad my kid's going to have a baby out of wedlock. It's the best thing that happened to me. And you would think that when I am faced with a new challenge or difficulty, I would say, oh, God, I can't wait to see your omnipotence in this experience. But I don't, because I have spiritual amnesia, right? I forget what God has just done for me, you know. And little side story, which I'm sure you... So my granddaughter, Clover, beautiful little girl, goes to kindergarten. They have the awards ceremony in September, first month. Do you know what award she got? First month in school, They called him Citizen of the Month, Clover Curtis, right? No. So I turn to my daughter and I say, you don't deserve that kid. That's the kid I deserve. So, but I've made my amends to my daughter. We were clean and we had a good laugh about it, right? And so the next thing is, you know, about a year before I retired, you know, my company Norms was family owned for many years. And about 5 years, 5 years ago, it was bought out by a corporation. And it was, you know, just, you know, as you know, when a corporation is just like the twist and the grind. And but I had this great boss that I'd had for 40 of my 45 years, and he was awesome. He was like a sponsor. Like if I messed up, he'd put me right and tell me about myself in a loving way. He was just fantastic. Everybody loved him. And his name was Jerry, my exact age. And he calls me up one day and he says, Nancy, I just want to let you know first that I'm going to retire. And I'm like, oh my God, you know. And like he goes, yes, I'm going to, it's like it was September. He says, I'm going to retire at the end of November, and your new boss is going to be Chip, who'd been with the company about a year from the corporation, right? I'm like, oh my God. I'd already heard about Chip from all the other managers that had him as their district supervisor, you know, and I'm like, oh my God. So that night I'm laying in bed and I feigned some happiness for Jerry. Like, I'm so happy for you. Not really, you know, but I, you know, he didn't know. And I'm laying in bed that night and I'm just like, you know, if Chip tells me about, because one of the big costs in a restaurant is the labor at $15 an hour minimum wage. If you have a couple kids that you don't need, you know, it's 30 bucks. It adds up, right? Big cost. We all know this, right? But Chip is like a hawk on labor, right? So I'm laying there in bed that night, and I'm like, if Chip starts telling me about the labor, I've got my argument back to him. I'm going to tell him, you know, this was during COVID. I'm going to say, you know, I went from 100 employees to 10 employees, and it's possible that my 10 good, hardworking employees might not have been the employees that qualified for any legal unemployment or anything. So, yeah, I give them a lot of hours. Okay, check. And then if Chip tells me about the food costs, I'm formulating my argument to give Chip. And then I have this thought, Chip isn't even my boss yet. Jerry's still my boss for another 2 months. Chip hasn't said one thing for me, and I'm already got a premeditated, I'm already ready for him, right? And then my next thought is, where's the humility in that? Like, I'm saying I can't be teachable because Chip only has a few years in the company, and you've got, at that time, I had 45 years in the company. You know, it's like, you know, we have a passing nod with humility. It's like, humility, what's up, right? I don't even know what humility is, right? So how would I like it if I sponsor Virginia and I say, Virginia, you know, I think your sobriety would be a little better if you went to a few more meetings and, you know, called 3 newcomers a day. Well, I'd like to, Nancy, but, you know, I have my husband and I have my job. You know, how would I like it if somebody already had their argument back for me and I saw how I was with Chip? And so what happened is, with the help of my sponsor, I decided I was going to be different with Chip, right? And so as soon as he became my boss, no lie, the emails start. Cut the labor, you know, it's too high, you're at a 26, you know, go run out and cut the floor, you know, come back. And it was nonstop, right? But what I would just say, thanks to the program, I would say, okay, I'll work on it, okay, instead of recriminating, okay, Chip, okay. And, you know, my sponsor always told me something. He says, when Chip tells you the labor's too high, he also doesn't add, and you're a piece of crap manager, I don't know how you've made it 45 years, you know, you're just no good. All he's saying is, the labor's too high, you don't have to take offense, you know what I mean, and take it onto yourself, you can just say okay. Saying okay is spiritual, and so I just said okay, and Chip fell in love with me. Not like that, but I mean, you know, and I fell in love with Chip. And it was beautiful, and when I retired, they had a, you know, big send-off for me, right, and you know, and Chip was crying, and it was just like, you know, thanks to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, that bad situation could have been a bad situation. Instead, Alcoholics Anonymous changed it, and I had a beautiful, you know, last year of my working life. And so last year, my husband died of 35 years. He got a brain tumor that was very sudden and rapid growing, and from the time of his diagnosis, he died within like 7 weeks, you know, and we found out he had the tumor, and then a week later they did this massive brain surgery, and he was kind of goofy, and it was just crazy, and, you know, but he was so beautiful. You know, he went to Zoom meetings every day until the day before he died. And he would get on there, and he was kind of wonky from the surgery. And it was during the playoffs, and he's a big Dodger fan, and he'd get on there, and Mickey, would you like to share? Yeah, how about those Dodgers? You know what I mean? And just like nobody shut him down. Not one person said, you know, we're talking about AA here, you know. And it was, but he wasn't supposed to go that fast. He was supposed to have, you know, about a year to live. And one day I'm at work, and they called me, the hospice nurse, also his ex-wife was his hospice nurse, which is a beautiful story of redemption and work on that we've had her in our life all these years, right? And she says, Mickey's declining. He's probably going to die in a day or two, right? So I leave work, and I race home. And by the time I got home, there was 20 people in my house. And by the rest of the day, there was about 80 people in my house, including my sponsor, Sharon, and her boyfriend, Pete, and all my kids and my stepkids flew in. There was, you know, alcoholics in the corner listening to Beatles music, which was my husband's big thing. You know, he loved the Beatles. And my friend Virginia and her husband bought hamburgers and hot dogs, and they're barbecuing out there. And this went on from like 8 in the morning till all day long. And Mickey's ex-wife, the hospice nurse, Lisa, was pretty upset about it. And she was like, he needs quiet. He needs peace and quiet. And I'm like, you know, people kept coming, and even though my husband was out of it, he was like in his hospital bed, and my beautiful daughter, Kelsey, when people would come over, people don't know what to really do or say when someone's dying, and I don't. I didn't know what to do, and they would come over to say something to Mickey, and she would bring them in, and she would sit them down in this chair by the bed, and she would say, Dad, Susie's here to see you. And to every single person that came that day, my husband sat up, like to Susie, he said, oh, Susie, you're my favorite. And then he would go back down. Like, so he had something, it was a beautiful death. He had something beautiful to say to everybody, and everybody got to tell him something beautiful. But meanwhile, Lisa's getting more stressed out. And finally, at about 9 o'clock at night, we hang a sign on the door. A lot of people have left. It's just family and a few close friends. We hang a note on the door. Please, no more visitors. We turn off the porch light. But that doesn't stop our people, does it, right? No. No, someone had announced at a meeting, and everybody loved my husband, and so a whole bunch of people from another group came over to say goodbye, and Lisa's about to blow her gasket, right? And she goes, he needs to be quiet. And then I turn around, and I look at Lisa, and I snap at her, and I say, this is what he would have wanted. And I go outside calmly. It's been a long day. My husband died the next day. I'm a little stressed out. I go outside to get a water. Someone had brought waters and ice. And here comes my sponsor, runs out. So loving. I love my sponsor. She's so beautiful. And she takes my arm, and she's rubbing and stroking my arm, and she's looking at me with all the love in the world. And she says, you know what, Nancy? She goes, people don't know what to do when people are dying. And then she says, you know, Lisa next takes my other arm. Lisa just thinks she knows what's best for Mickey. She is a hospice nurse, and she's trying to do what's best for Mickey, too. She loves him, too. And then she says, you know, you hurt her feelings when you snapped at her. And here's my thought, but I didn't say it to my sponsor. Are you kidding me? My husband's dying in there? And I snapped, my bad. Why don't you go tell Lisa? Why don't you go in there and tell Lisa, Nancy's husband's dying. Cut her some slack. But Lisa's not in the program. I am. She says, anyway. And she was right. And she was right. And I went in there and I made amends to my husband. And I'm, you know, so grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous because it works in the very best of times and the very worst of times, right? I still have the opportunity to be different and work my program. And last thing I'll share, I just have a couple more minutes, is, you know, when my daughter went to kindergarten, my sponsor told me to sign up to be a volunteer, and I put my name on the list, and the PTA sucked me in and didn't spit me out till she got out of high school, and I was grateful for it. And one of the things, my childhood dream was, I had always wanted to be a teacher, and I worked every weekend, and so I was off during the week, and so I got the opportunity to volunteer at school a lot. And it was a different time in schools. Parents could just walk on the campus, and, you know, I got to be the room mom every year, and it was just a beautiful time. And when my daughter went into fourth grade, she had this teacher named Mrs. Nicasio, and this one teacher changed my daughter's life. She saw past her hyperness and her craziness and saw that she was smart and all these things, and it just changed my daughter's life. And I love this teacher, and I would bring her Starbucks every day, and I would put up bulletin boards and grade papers. I just loved her, right? And so it came time every year they had a field trip for the class, and every year I got to go on the field trip, you know, with the kids on the bus because I was the room mom. And but this year Mrs. Nicasio sent home a note and said only 4 parents get to go on the bus, and I'm going to do this. It's going to be like a lottery. And if you want to go, put your name on a paper, send it back in, and I'm going to draw 4 names. So I put my name on the paper. I'm thinking, this is just a formality because I know Mrs. Nicasio Scamal is going to pick my name. So the next day I'm at work, and my daughter calls me at work. She says, Mom, Mrs. Nicasio picked the names, and you didn't get picked. And so I start bawling. You know, I'm crying. I'm like, oh, my God. I'm not a crier. I'm just like, Jesus, I was so upset, right? And then she goes, here's Dad. Here's Dad. And my husband got on the phone. He goes, Mrs. Nicasio felt so bad that you didn't get picked that when I came to pick up Kelsey, she sprinted over to the car to say that she was sorry and that she wanted you to come and be her special guest, only you just would have to drive your own car. And so now I'm really crying because the teacher knows I'm crazy. I tried to hide it. You know, you try to hide it. But she didn't just casually pass my husband. She sprinted to the car. You know, she knew I'd be upset. And I was like, how did she know, right? And I'm like, oh, my God, why am I so upset? And I'm upset because I don't get to ride on the school bus. I've always gotten to ride on the school bus. I'm mad, right? And then my next thought is, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous didn't teach me to bring Starbucks and put up bulletin boards and grade papers to get something. My sponsor used to say, my first sponsor, you know, you're given with a hook. You're given, you're expecting something back, and that's not Alcoholics Anonymous. We give with no expectation of getting anything back. And then, you know, my next thought was, you know, and shame on you, Nancy Cook, like I've had everything my heart desires in this program, right? Everything, not money, not all that stuff, but all those beautiful things that the program gives us, those experiences, those moments, you know. And but I still lack the ability to be happy for someone else to get something. Like, I need everything and one more thing to be happy, right? And so I'm good with it. And so the day of the field trip rolls around, I drive up to the school, the kids and the other parents get on the bus, they drive off, I get in my car, I drive down, it's at the Long Beach Aquarium. I get to the aquarium, I go into the aquarium, I walk all around, the kids aren't there. Like, that's weird. So I go out to where the buses come, where they have a bus parking lot, different from the car one, and I go out to the bus parking lot, and the buses aren't there, and that's weird. And so where the buses come in, it's like a frontage road by the ocean. You know, the buses come in the back way to the aquarium. So I'm standing out on this little frontage, gravelly asphalt road in the weeds and stuff by the side of the road. I'm the only one out there, and the buses are rolling by for like an hour. They ended up getting lost, you know, somehow over the bridge. Anyway, I finally see the Downey school bus, and I'm so excited when I see them. I'm just like, woo, woo! And the kids throw down the windows, the parents, the teachers, everybody. Mrs. Cook! Mrs. Cook! Woo! Right? And it was like the first night I drank, right? Only this time it really did happen. You know what I mean? It really did happen. So if I had gotten what I wanted, which was to ride the bus, I would have missed that little experience that God had for me, you know. My sponsor talks, so her word is awake. She wants me to be awake of all those beautiful things because I sometimes don't see it. Like I said, in my vision of what I think my life should look like, I'm stepping over unicorns, you know what I mean? I'm in parking places, you know, just like, where's for me? What's for me? You know what I mean? And I miss it. And, you know, I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I want to be awake today, and thanks for letting me share.